This podcast is supported by Indeed.com, helping you find quality candidates with Indeed Instant Match. Indeed searches through millions of resumes in their database to help show you great candidates instantly. Receive a free $75 credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/technews. Terms and conditions apply.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, March 26th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Lots of companies use algorithms to surface ads, suggest products we should buy, and recommend music we might like based on data about our browsing habits. One company is applying that same idea to children's books. Our arts and entertainment reporter Ellen Gammerman will join us to explain after these headlines. The CEOs of Facebook, Twitter, and Google appeared before the House Energy and Commerce Committee yesterday. Lawmakers on both sides of the political aisle grilled them on how they moderate content on their platforms. The hearing was the executives' first appearance in Congress since the Capitol riot on January 6th, during which many members were actually inside the Capitol building. Here's Democratic Congressman Mike Doyle in his opening statement.
That attack and the movement that motivated started and was nourished on your platforms. Your platform suggested groups for people to join, videos they should view, and posts they should like, driving this movement forward with terrifying speed and efficiency.
Both Republicans and Democrats have signaled that they think the tech companies have too much power, but they've disagreed on what exactly to do about it. On yesterday's show, our tech policy reporter Ryan Tracy said it's often helpful to pay attention to lawmakers' questions during these kinds of hearings to see where there might be some consensus. Here's Ryan again with what we heard.
Well, we've heard a lot about Section 230, the legal immunity that these platforms enjoy for user-generated content. We even had Fred Upton, who's a Republican congressman from Michigan, who's been in Congress a long time, say that he thinks there will be changes to Section 230. So that was an interesting take from him. You know, there's still not consensus about what a change would look like, but certainly a lot of questions on that. We also saw questions about other issues. You know, there were Democrats who were talking about more regulations and accountability for these social media platforms, maybe in the form of a new government agency. Republicans asked a lot of questions about children and, you know, whether it be child privacy or concerns about bullying or concerns about, you know, how using social media affects kids. And who knows, maybe that means Republicans are going to be proposing something in that area. We'll have to see.
And venture capitalists have long poured their investment dollars into startups working on artificial intelligence. Now, some VC firms are starting to use the technology to figure out which companies to fund in the first place. Here's our AI reporter, Jared Counsell, with more.
AI is good at recognizing patterns and even picking up on correlations that, you know, humans may not see themselves. So in this case, the firms that I talked to, essentially what they're doing is they're training these machine learning models to look at hundreds of thousands of data points about historical financings for startups. And so what the AI is doing is looking at, okay, you know, which startups were the most successful and what were some of the key attributes of those startups.
For the moment, these efforts are still nascent, but a recent Gartner forecast predicts that AI will be involved in 75% of VC investment decisions by 2025. Speaking of, venture capitalists aren't the only ones focusing on AI. So are some of the creators of children's books. We'll have more on that next.
This podcast is supported by Indeed.com, helping you find quality candidates with Indeed Instant Match. Indeed searches through millions of resumes in their database to help show you great candidates instantly. Receive a free $75 credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/technews. Terms and conditions apply.
If you think back on the books you read as a kid, you might remember stories revolving around a couple of frogs, a friendship between a pig and a spider, and maybe one very hungry caterpillar. Traditionally, those kinds of books were the result of a creative back and forth between an author and an editor, sometimes bringing in some data from sales numbers or a focus group, too. But now, a digital library called Epic is working to bring machine learning into the process. So for more on this, we turn to our reporter, Ellen Gammerman. She covers arts and entertainment for us. Hey, Ellen, happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Okay, so tell us about this online library epic and how widely used it is in classrooms.
So it is an online subscription service that has been around for almost a decade, but really in the last year, it's become a real fixture of remote learning. A lot of parents will hear their children going onto Epic, directed by a teacher, to go read, spend some time on that site. Their reach has doubled to more than 50 million children around the world in the last year.
And as they're spending time on the platform, what kind of data does Epic collect about students and how do they use it?
They collect pretty much everything that a child is clicking on the site. So it's a kind of closed platform. Kids search around looking for something to read. They'll then start reading, and whether they lose interest in a book or read all the way through, all of that information is gathered and saved. And some of the most important information is what they type in the search box. What are they really interested in? What do they want to read? What do they just kind of want to type in to see what comes up? So they use a lot of that information for their recommendation engine. So they'll know that a child is really interested in a subject like dinosaurs, and then that will help the site then offer up other books for their child to read once that book is done. But a side benefit for them, in 2018, Epic started doing original books. Those books are now being informed by the data that Epic collects.
Got it. And what has all that data taught them about the kinds of books that kids are interested in?
Well, first of all, let's just get it out there. They love to search the word poop. It's one of their favorite things to do. But beyond that, they really enjoy ferocious animals. They're very interested in certain troubling moments in history, like the Titanic. They are very curious about pizza. They do like unicorns. They're interested in major natural events like volcanoes. Area 51 is huge. And this is all kind of self-reinforcing because the more they look at it, just the way any search would work, the more it comes up. So other kids are now seeing some of these very popular titles.
And just to take that a step further, how does Epic get from, you know, knowing that kids are interested in pizza and Area 51 to actually making children's books?
Well, it's really interesting. I sat in on several brainstorms that their creative team had during the pandemic. So it was all on Zoom. And Epic has a writer's room or an equivalent of that. So they have the data there. They know what they want to write, and they're brainstorming just the way you would if you're an editor and are talking to a writer. Then when it comes time for certain key elements, like who the other characters are going to be, they'll look at the data, they'll look up, let's say they want an animal character. They'll look at the popularity of different animals. They'll think about what books are out there that already have those animals in them. They'll think about how does that animal fit with what they want that character to be able to do. And they'll then start playing around with it. I should say, though, really, it's a springboard for a creative process that looks like any writer's creative process. Once they have the data and it's sent them in a particular direction, they're just writers and editors figuring out a fun story. They're not robots plugging words into a program.
So it sounds like with Epic, they're kind of taking that more traditional creative process and just informing it with more data. And of course, you know, anytime we talk about data collection, especially data collection of children, there are usually privacy concerns that come up. Is that the case here as well?
Yes, there are concerns. I mean, a lot of educational websites have gotten dinged for not being transparent enough about what information they're collecting, how they're using it, what exactly their standards are. The group Common Sense Media, which is a watchdog on children's entertainment and technology, they've given 2/3 of all educational sites a warning rating for various reasons. Epic got one of those as well for not being transparent enough about how it is collecting, using, saving the data. And there are privacy experts who say that as long as a child's data is saved, even if it's anonymous, even if it's used in an aggregated way, it's still not acceptable to them. Why save the information at all? They say it's the equivalent of a librarian following you home and taking down notes on every single thing you read. It's a privacy issue.
And how does Epic respond to those concerns? What does it say about how it handles the data it collects?
Right. They say the data is all stripped of any identifying information. They say they don't show third-party ads. They don't share the data with anyone else. They employ industry standard encryption technology to protect the information. They don't use student information for advertising or marketing. They know that, like a lot of other educational websites, they need to be very much on top of this subject.
So I guess the big question is this the future of children's book publishing? And if so, what does that mean for the industry?
I think for something like creativity, we're seeing all over pop culture, there is a blending of technology and very old-fashioned means, and children's books seem to be no exception to that. There's always going to be a need for that creative spark that happens between people and only people. I'm sure that publishers would say that, you know, if you had information that kids liked suns more than moons, it doesn't mean that Margaret Wise Brown should have written Goodnight Sun. There are certain twists of creative thought that are always going to be important and can't be replicated by a machine. But that said, this is something that newspapers are doing, that publishers are doing all across the media landscape. It's SEO. It's trying to figure out what are people searching? What are they interested in? Ultimately, you want your work to be read. And that is a big part of what's driving this. So I don't see this going away in any area of publishing.
All right. Our reporter, Ellen Gammerman. Thanks, Ellen.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for Tech News Briefing this week. Our supervising producer is Chris Zinsley. Our executive producer is Kateri Yoakum. And I'm your host, Amanda Llewellyn. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.